13. Glory Sickness. Ganner walked one pace behind Jason's left shoulder, trying to look solemn and dignified rather than scared out of his mind. He was so nauseated his eyes were watering. He fought to pay attention to something else, anything else. If he kept thinking about how sick he was getting, he'd drop to his knees right here and vomit his guts out. A broad ring of those Yuuzhan Vong who'd led the cheers back in the vaulted hall, whom Ganner had correctly guessed to be of the priestly caste, surrounded them at a respectful distance of about 10 meters. Ahead, ringed at a similarly respectful distance by an honor guard of warriors, walked Nomanor and the Shaper, who'd been in the hall, a big, ugly beggar with a cluster of tentacles growing out of one side of his mouth. The vanguard of the processional was a wedge of bizarrely mutilated warriors who carried various creatures of all sizes and indescribable shapes, creatures that the warriors stabbed and squeezed and twisted in time with their march, producing a kind of rhythmic music from their antiphonal screams of agony. And then, behind the priests who ringed Ganner and Jason, marched an immense parade of warriors, rank upon rank, marching in lockstep, carrying unit banners that were some kind of sapling, whose tops sprouted multicolored snakes' nests of writhing cilia, each different, distinctive, weaving patterns of color and motion that made Ganner's queasiness decidedly worse. But there was more to it than this. The whole business was making Ganner sicker and sicker. He hated it. Jason spoke in quiet tones throughout the processional, relating bits of insight he'd gained into Yuuzhan Vong culture and biotechnology, keeping his voice low, half-whispered, lips barely moving so that none of their escort would know he was talking. Ganner could only understand half of what he heard, and he was sure he wouldn't remember half of what he understood. He couldn't concentrate on what Jason might be telling him. Most of his attention had to stay focused on walking while his legs wobbled and kept trying to collapse. And did it matter what he remembered and what he didn't? He wouldn't live to tell anyone. It wasn't fear that was making him sick. He was afraid to die, sure, but he'd faced that fear before, without this knee-buckling nausea. He clutched the hand grip of Anakin's lightsaber up his sleeve. Only that smooth solidity let him keep a composed expression on his face instead of puking down the front of his robe. Maybe part of what was making Ganner sick was the world itself. He'd thought he'd be ready for his first view of Coruscant. He'd heard dozens of tales about it from the refugees on the camp ships during his investigation. He'd heard about the insanely prolific jungle that patched the ruined planetary city. He'd been told about the dazzling orbital rings that some of the refugees called the Bridge. He knew that the Yuuzhan Vong had altered Coruscant's orbit to bring it closer to its star. But knowing these things was entirely different from walking out of cool shadow into a blue-white noon that jammed needles into his eyeballs and pounded sweat from his hairline, sweat that trickled into his mouth, his ears, trailed like a river down his spine and made his leggings stick to his knees. The air was as humid as a priapulin's breath, and smelled like the whole planet had been a monkey-lizard den that somebody had buried in rotting honey-flowers. The processional spiraled through a titanic hedge maze that was still growing, knitting itself into place around them, huge curving walls of interwoven branches that sported needle-pointed thorns ranging from half a centimeter to as long as Ganner's arm. Thousands of Yuuzhan Vong of unknown caste clambered up and down and across these walls, festooning them with brilliantly colored epiphytes and flowering vines, hanging living cages and nests occupied by a bewildering variety of creatures so alien Ganner couldn't even really see them clearly. His eyes kept trying to interpret them as insects or reptiles, rodents or felines or some other type of animal with which he was already familiar, when these were really nothing like anything he'd ever seen before. He caught some of Jason's explanation, that this hedge maze would serve a dual purpose. Not only was it a ceremonial avenue, but it would also double as an anti-personnel defense surrounding the all-important well of the world brain if Yuuzhan Tar were ever invaded. When mature, the hedge thorns would meet overhead, forming a tunnel 20 meters high and 30 wide, hard as durasteel, fireproof, and resilient enough to minimize the effects of explosives. And the thorns would contain a neurotoxin so potent that a single prick could destroy the central nervous system of any unfortunate creature who touched one. Ground-born invaders would be forced to trace the same route along which the processional now marched, facing dozens of ambush points along the way. Occasionally, through gaps in the half-completed maze, Ganner could catch glimpses of their destination. Enveloping the well-of-the-world brain was a mountain of Yorick coral half a kilometer high, spreading in a shallow dome nearly 2 kilometers across. Even buried, the shape that underlay the coral mountain was, to anyone who'd ever been to Coruscant, unmistakable. Ganner knew exactly what it used to be. That might have been part of what was making him feel sick, too. The well-of-the-world brain used to be the Galactic Senate. The Senate had come through the planetary bombardment with only cosmetic damage. Its original architect, 1,000 years before, had claimed that any weapon powerful enough to destroy the Galactic Senate would crack the planet itself. While this was a boastful exaggeration, there was no doubt that the Galactic Senate was one of the most durable buildings ever designed. Even the total destruction of the original Senate Hall 10 years before had left the structure itself barely damaged. The Grand Convocation Chamber of the New Republic had been built directly upon the bones of the old. The Senate's honeycombed construction gave it incredible structural strength, similar, in engineering terms, to Yorick Coral itself. Only direct hits could do any damage at all, and the interior had been designed in crumple zones, localizing damage by minimizing shock transmission. Jason explained, "Once the Yorick Coral enzymatically digested the Senate's duracrete and transperisteel and finished using the digested minerals to build its own skeleton, the Yuuzhan Vong would have taken that long-forgotten architect's boast and made it into prophecy. Any weapon that could harm the world brain would have to be so powerful that it would destroy the planet, too. Not that they were content with this. They had also seeded the dome with a defensive array of Dovin basils. Even if the New Republic somehow delivered a planet buster, the well might survive the planet's destruction as a self-contained vessel, preserving the brain with its irreplaceable genetics and invaluable skills. But the coral conversion was not yet complete. There were still some weak points in the structure. For example, the area damaged by the proton bomb that had detonated in Borsk Felia's office." "Somebody bombed Felia's office?" Ganner muttered to the back of Jason's head. "Before or after the invasion?" Jason's soft answering chuckle was dry as summer on Tatooine. He nodded toward the jungle-clutched ruin of the Imperial Palace, enough structure still visible to show the half-kilometer bite the bomb had taken from one corner. "They say Felia set off the bomb himself. They say he took out something like 25,000 crack troops and a bunch of high-ranking Vong officers, including the drop commander." "They who? Who says? The Yuuzhan Vong themselves. They admire that kind of thing. They look on Felia as a kind of minor hero." "Huh. They didn't know him like we did." Jason's shoulders twitched in what might have been a shrug. "And maybe we didn't know him as well as we should have." Ganner shook his head. This conversation wasn't making him feel any better. Just the opposite. "How do you even know this isn't all a test?" he asked. "How do you know there won't be a company of warriors waiting inside the well to kill you at the first sign you're not going to go through with this?" "I don't. But I've been told that the Yuuzhan Vong would regard such a test as sacrilege. Warriors would never be allowed to lie in ambush in the well." "Told? Told by whom?" A friend. Her name's Vergere." Ganner scowled, remembering the alien in his dream. "Is this THE Vergere? The same one who was the pet of that Yuuzhan Vong assassin? The same one who healed Mara with her tears? The same one whose tears have healed you? The one who turned you over to the Yuuzhan Vong?" Ganner didn't like the sound of this at all. "You're sure she's on our side?" "Our side?" Jason said distantly. "You mean the New Republic side?" "I doubt it." Suddenly, Ganner was overtaken by a stingingly potent wish that he might see Jason's face. There was something about the angle of his head. "I'm not sure whose side she's on," Jason continued. "I'm not sure she's on anybody's. I'm not sure she believes in sides at all." "But you told her what you're planning? How can you trust her?" "Because I have decided to believe she won't betray me." Ganner heard the echo inside his head. Trust is always an act of faith. That swelling ball of nausea in his stomach was getting heavier with every step. The world swam around him like a slow whirlpool of gelatin. The thorn maze abruptly ended, opening onto an immense wedge-shaped causeway of curving pale ribs that seemed to be the smoothly interlaced horizontal trunks of living trees. Leaf-bearing branches tangled toward the sun to either side. The foot of the causeway spanned at least 100 meters between the branch walls. It tapered like an arrowhead as it rose, forming a ramp whose point touched the great door of the Galactic Senate. A double leaf of durasteel layered like the hull armor of a star destroyer, intaglioed with the galactic great seal, surrounded by the seals of the thousand worlds. Here the Yorick coral had been shaped to preserve access. There grew around the perimeter of the door an immature hatch sphincter of incredible size, though still only half-grown, that left the central third of the great door exposed. As the vanguard began to mount the causeway, their music of screams slowed, deepened, broadened in a decorous segue from the briskly martial to the solemnly devotional. The change in the music seemed to suck the last of the strength from Ganner's legs. His knees buckled, and he pitched forward onto the causeway's foot, curled into a fetal ball around the spiny fist of nausea clenched in his guts. Saliva flooded his mouth, and his sides heaved. He squeezed shut his eyes to restrain a retch. "Ganner? Ganner, what's wrong?" Jason's voice came from close by, just above, low and worried. "Come on, Ganner, you have to get up." Ganner couldn't get up. He couldn't speak. He couldn't even open his eyes. The smooth, hard trunks that made up the ribs of the causeway were cool beneath him, much cooler than the sun that scorched his other side, and all he wanted was to die. Right here, right now. If only he could die. The grunting hack of the Yuuzhan Vong tongue sounded in the middle distance, two voices, one imperiously disdainful, the other unctuous, conciliating. A moment later he heard Nomanor's rasp in basic closer by. "The Shaper Lord inquires why the Jedi cowers like a brenzlit. I lied to him, Jason Solo. I told him this is how humans show reverence for the true gods. Make him get up. Make this weak, pathetic excuse for a Jedi get on with this sacrifice. Before the Shaper Lord knows, I lied." "He's only a man," Ganner heard Jason replied. "You can't keep a human sedated for weeks and then expect him to march like this. He's weak because he's ill." Ganner burned with shame. Even Jason was lying for him now. The weakness that pinned him helplessly to the causeway wasn't physical, and having Jason make excuses for him only made it worse. "Everyone has to lie for me," he thought. "Everyone has to pretend I'm not as pathetic and useless and weak as I really am. But I can't pretend any more. I can't." Self-loathing rose up the back of Ganner's throat like vomit, burning, driving stinging tears through his eyes. Within his robe's sleeve, his thumb found the activation plate on Anakin's lightsaber. Without really understanding what he was doing, he pressed the lightsaber's crystal against his own ribs. One quick squeeze, and the purple shaft of pure energy would shear through flesh and bone and weak, watery guts to spear oblivion into his coward's heart. "Come on, Ganner, we're almost there," Jason whispered. "Don't screw it up now." "Sorry. Can't do this," was all Ganner could say, a low, miserable moan. He hugged himself, clutching at his ribs, arms crossed over his rebelliously spasming stomach. "Can't do this, Jason. Sorry. Let you down." His finger tightened on the lightsaber's activation plate. and invisible hands caught him under the shoulders and lifted him to his feet. Though he hung limp, the processional once more began to move forward, mounting the causeway toward the great door. His legs swung without his will to drive them, moving as though he walked under his own power. His body tingled with the touch of the force. Jason was carrying him. "There, you see," Jason said to Nomanor. "He's fine. Return to your place and reassure the Shaper Lord." Ganner hung in Jason's invisible force grip, drowning in humiliation as Nomanor moved quickly away. If only he could die. If only the trunk causeway beneath his feet would gape like a mouth and swallow him right now. His whole life, he'd chased a single dream. He had only wanted to be a hero. That's all. Not even that. Not even a hero. Not really. All he'd ever wanted was to walk through a room full of strangers and overhear somebody say, "There goes Ganner Rysode. He's a man who gets things done." "Yeah, I get things done. I get things done to me." Some hero. More like a damsel in distress. And that was it. That's what was making him sick. Himself. He was sick of being Ganner Rysode, sick of trying to be a hero, sick of trying not to be a hero, sick of being a crappy Jedi, a mediocre pilot, and a bloody lousy leader of men, sick of being a joke. Just sick. The vanguard parted as it approached the great door, dividing down the middle to line either side of the causeway, as their music of screams swelled toward a triumphal climax. The warriors who accompanied Nomanor and the Shaper Lord formed another line within. The priests who had surrounded Jason and Ganner knelt, lowering their foreheads to the causeway. Jason paced forward steadily, smoothly, giving no sign of strain, no hint that might betray effort, no clue to the assembled thousands of Yuuzhan Vong that he was carrying Ganner like a child in the invisible arms of the Force. He came to a stop before the great door and moved Ganner to his side. From here the living city of Yuuzhan Tar spread below them, a vast, tangled jungle of every conceivable color and texture of life, shaped by a skeleton built of duracrete and transparasteel. "Ganner, can you stand?" he asked softly. "You don't have to walk, just stand. I need to do something else right now." Ganner clenched every ounce of his will to swallow the rising tide of his shame and self-disgust. He drew on the force to hold himself upright and for the strength to steady his voice. "Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I'm okay, Jason," he lied. Then made himself say, "Thanks." Jason flashed him a hint of that quick, solo smile. "You'd do the same for me." "As if I'd ever have to," Ganner thought, but held his tongue. Solemnity settled back over Jason's features like a mask. He turned to face the assembled thousands and lifted his arms. "I am Jason Solo. I am human. I was a Jedi." His voice boomed out like artillery fire, and the echoes came back in Yuuzhan Vong. "Nick Priyaz, Jason Solo. Nick Priyaz, human. Nick Prizio, Jedi. I am now a servant of the truth." How he said that made Ganner suddenly scowl. For someone who was only playing a part, Jason sounded unsettlingly sincere. Ganner felt a surge in the force like a vast, rushing wind. It passed him without touching him. The great door swung inward to reveal the shadowed reach of the atrium beyond and the cavernous mouths of the grand concourse to either side. Jason turned his palms upward, as though reaching for the braided arch of impossible color that was the bridge overhead. "Witness," he thundered. The echo cried, "Churok! Witness the will of the gods." Before the echo finished roaring, "Churok Yunshalat," Jason had already turned and walked briskly through the great door. A swirl of the forest drew Ganner after him. Nomanor and the Shaper Lord made to follow, along with the priests and the vanguard band. But as soon as Ganner was clear of the doorway, Jason turned and made a small gesture that Ganner felt as another swift, incredibly powerful rush in the force. The great door boomed shut. Echoes faded. Slowly. The atrium had become a vast cavern of living Uruk coral. The immense statues that had once represented the varied species of the New Republic had become unidentifiable, misshapen pillars like boils of old lava. Shadows huge and black masked every fold of coral, and the mouths of the grand concourse to either side yawned bottomless depths of night. The sole light, a pulsing, sulphurous glow mingling reds and yellows, leaked into the atrium from an archway opposite the great door. "What's making that light? And wait," Ganner said numbly. "I don't remember any door there. That was, the Information Services office, wasn't it? Maybe you've noticed. Things have changed." Jason was already trotting toward the archway. "Follow me. We don't have much time." Ganner stumbled after him. The arch led to nearly half a kilometer of Yorick coral tunnel. The roof and sides formed a rough semicircle, a little less than 5 meters wide at the base and the same in height. Pulsing red-orange light filled the far end, flaring sometimes to an eye-burning yellow. "How are you doing?" Jason asked as he jogged along. Ganner was lagging, breathing hard. "Keeping up okay? You need any more help?" I am... "Not going to screw this up," Ganner swore to himself. "Okay. I'm okay. I'm right behind you." The tunnel's roof opened to a vast, cavernous, red-lit space overhead, and the walls, too, fell away. The tunnel's floor became a cantilevered bridgeway out to a circular platform 10 meters across, which hung unsupported in great swirls of sulphurous mist that burned Ganner's throat and scoured tears from his eyes. "What is this place?" "Look around," Jason said grimly. If the scorching heat or brimstone-reeking fog bothered him at all, he didn't show it. He seemed to be listening for something. "Give me a minute. I have to concentrate." Ganner barely heard him. He gaped, turning in a slow, dumbfounded circle. This used to be the Senate's grand convocation chamber. 100 meters below, where once had stood the pillar of the Chief of State's podium, there now boiled a great pool of glowing slime. Huge bubbles roiled to the surface, bursting into flares of scarlet and starflower yellow. It was from this pool that the light came. Rising around the pool, a gargantuan bowl of Yorick coral climbed the staggered rank upon rank of senatorial platforms, slowly scaling the walls toward the dim, shadowed vault of the ceiling. And down in that pool of glowing slime, a vast, fleshy bulge moved, breaching the surface in a slick, black curve before submerging once more. Ganner jolted back from the edge. "Gah!" "Jason, there's something down there." "Yeah." Jason stepped to the front edge of the platform. "Don't worry. It's a friend of mine." "A friend?" Ganner looked down again. And again the creature breached. Black. Bloated. A ghastly stomach turned inside out, swollen with malice. A yellow eye the size of an X-wing glared up at them, blinking, wiped by a triple layer of transparent eyelids that slid across its surface at different angles to scrape it free of slime. Then a second eye appeared, blinked, and fixed on them. A parallax for ranging. A spray of tentacles shot upward from the slime. Ganner threw himself backward as tentacles hissed through the fog around them, impossibly flexible ropes of muscle slicing the air so fast he couldn't even tell how many there were. Tentacles slammed against the platform, knocking Ganner half off his feet, chipping away head-sized hunks of coral. Jason never moved. "This friend of yours," Ganner said shakily, "it doesn't seem too happy to see you." "Yeah, well, I can't say I'm surprised. The last time we saw each other, I was trying to kill it." "To kill, your friend?" Gazing downward in a daze of horrified revulsion, Ganner tried to laugh. It came out too high, too tight, too close to a hysterical giggle. "How do you treat your enemies?" Jason cocked his head, his brown eyes suddenly thoughtful. Then he shrugged. "I don't have any enemies." "What?" Jason pointed at an angle, down across the well. "See that platform? The one sticking out under that fold of coral? That's the platform for the Kashi'ik delegation. They like manual doors. I know you're not as strong as a Wookiee, but with the Force, you should be able to get them open."
"Down there?"
Ganner clutched his guts again. "You want me to go in there? Listen, straight back on your right, you'll find the Kashi'ik senator's private office. There's a turbolift shaft behind a concealed door by his desk. Just slide down the inside of the shaft. It'll take you right into the tunnels." "Tunnels? A secret turbo shaft? When was Jason going to start making sense?" "What would the Wookiees be doing with a secret turbo shaft?" "I think all the delegates' offices had them. They go into concealed tunnels that are full of shielded conference rooms for secret meetings and stuff. They even connect with Phalia's offices in the Imperial Palace." "How do you know all this?"
"Ganner," Jason said dryly, "those offices used to be my mother's."
Yeah. If you can reach the tunnels, you should at least be able to find a place to hide for a while. You might live a few days. You might even escape."
Ganner went cold.
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about making a run for it, Ganner. Give yourself a chance."
"Oh, no, no, no."
Ganner stepped back, shaking his head.
"Oh, no, you don't.
We've only got a minute or two before Numanor decides he can't keep pretending nothing's gone wrong. About 2 minutes after that, they'll blow open the great door. They'll kill me about 30 seconds later."
"What can you do in here that's worth your life?"
"I don't have time to explain. I'm not even sure I can explain."
"You expect me to make a run for it and let you die? For something you can't even explain? You're coming with me, or I'm not going."
"Still playing the hero, Ganner?"
Ganner winced. That had hit too close to the bone. But he stood his ground. "No, I'm just the sidekick here. You're the hero, Jason. We need heroes like you. That's why I came looking for you. The New Republic needs you."
He lowered his voice. "Jaina needs you.
If there's even the faintest ghost of a chance, you have to live, Jason. You have to at least try."
Jason shook his head. He had that Skywalker Durasteel on his face again.
"No, I don't. The only thing I have to do is be who I am."
"What are you talking about? Anakin had his path. Jaina has hers." He spread his hands as though to indicate the futility of arguing with fate.
"I have mine."
"I don't care about any stupid path,"
Ganner said desperately. "They'll blow the door any second. We have to go."
"No, you have to go."
"I have to—"
"Ganner, listen. I need you to understand. The only power I have, the only power any of us have, is to be who we are. That's what I'm going to do here. Be who I am."
"You're not making any sense. How old are you? 17, 18? You don't even really know who you are."
"I don't have to know. All I have to do is decide," Jason answered serenely. "Choose and act. I am not leaving you here. That's up to you.
How long is it going to take, Jason? How long?"
Ganner stepped toward him.
"What if they kill you first?"
Jason shrugged. "Then I lose.
When you start to become who you are, the first thing you learn is that there is nothing to fear."
A ripping roar of thunder behind him blew away Ganner's reply, and the bridgeway jounced sharply, smacking his feet, making him stagger. Whirling, he saw a roil of smoke belch out from the tunnel's mouth, a reeking gust like burning swamp gas.
"That's the door," Jason said distantly. "We're out of time. I guess we both lose."
Ganner didn't move. Illumination burst within his brain. In that instant, everything finally made sense. He understood what Jason had been talking about. There was nothing to fear. He understood the power of being who he was. He didn't even really have to know who he was. He could decide. He could choose and act. Suddenly, his life made sense. His life had been a story of pretending to be a hero. Well, he thought, okay then. His nausea had vanished. It wasn't even a memory. No more weakness, no more uncertainty. Doubt and fear had disappeared along with the nausea. He hefted Anakin's lightsaber. "We both lose unless," he spoke slowly, "unless somebody doesn't let them in." "You have to play the hero," Jason said sadly, "even if it kills you." Ganner squeezed the blade to life and stared at its sizzling purple shaft. Here was the weapon of a hero, a real hero, not a play-actor, not a pretend hero, like Ganner had always been. But this weapon was now in Ganner's hand. "I don't have to be a real hero," he thought. A dazzling old Ganner, forget the consequences and have some fun smile, dawned on his face. He shook himself and years fell from his shoulders. His eyes lit up, sparkling like arc gaps in the red-lit gloom. He felt shiny as a war droid and twice as tough. "I don't have to be a hero," he thought in silent wonder. "All I have to do is pretend." "Like I said, I'm just the sidekick here," he said carelessly. "My job is to make sure the real hero lives long enough to do his. That whole needing to be a hero thing has always been my greatest weakness." Jason stared at him, into him, through him, as though he knew him to his very core, and he nodded. "But you should know that it can also be your greatest strength. Give yourself permission to use that strength, Ganner. You'll need it."
"Yeah."
Ganner looked into the lightsaber's blade as though his future could be read in its amethyst shaft. He grinned at what he saw.
"You know, I never liked you, Jason. I thought you were soft, wishy-washy, an over-intellectual bleeding heart. I never liked you either."
Ganner looked up to find Jason answering his grin with a gentle, knowing smile. "I thought you were nothing but a grandstander, a play-acting glory hunter, more concerned with looking good than with doing good." Ganner laughed out loud.
"You were right. So were you."
Jason held out his hand. "So here's our chance to show the Yuuzhan Vong what a grandstander and a bleeding heart can do." Ganner took Jason's hand and gripped it fiercely.
"It'll be a show they'll never forget."
Jason stepped back and lifted his arms, and the pulse of scarlet and green glow from the arterial sigils on his robe synchronized with the shifting light of the bubbling slime below. Tentacles coiled upward behind him, beyond the lip of the platform, arching high overhead, trailing slime that shone and pulsed, framing him with a living corona. Jason's silhouette became a shadow cross within a bramble of light.
"Jason," Ganner gasped, reaching toward him.
"Behind you, I know." Jason turned his face upward. The tentacles curved down to meet him. He lowered his hands to accept them as their shimmering coils settled across his shoulders. "Don't be afraid. This is all part of it." The tentacles now lifted Jason in their grip, bearing him up and off the platform, cradling him gently, almost lovingly, as they lowered him toward the bubbling slime. But down there those immense yellow eyes still glittered alien malice. "Buy me 10 minutes," Jason said. "That should be enough." The clatter of booted feet grew from the tunnel. Ganner paused for one last moment, watching Jason be pulled beneath the surface of the slime. He felt a burst of power in the force, a shove from below, an impulse. "Go!" He bunched the front of his robe in his free hand and tore it off his body. The dark-glowing arterial sigils spasmed, leaking black light. He tossed the robe into a heap on the platform. He went. Numenor squinted through the smoke that boiled from the shattered gape of what had been the great door. Squad after squad of warriors slipped close around the twisted durasteel wreckage that pinged and groaned as it cooled. They spread out within the smoke and shadow-filled atrium, weapons at the ready, eyes straining for any glimpse of a target. A squad of warriors had sprinted down the coral tunnel toward the well, to reconnoiter. That had been 5 minutes ago. None had returned. Numenor hung back in the doorway. He had not survived so much of this war by underestimating Jedi. Red-gold slime light pulsed through the smoke from the well archway. A figure solidified in that archway, a silhouette approaching lazily through the smoke, haloed by the slime light. A human silhouette. Bonelessly powerful. A sand panther out for a stroll, relaxed but alert. Poised. Predatory. A superstitious chill climbed Nomanor's spine. Warriors fanned out, officers glancing back to their commander, who looked to Numenor.
"This is your event, Executor. What would you have us do?"
You there,"
Numenor called nervously in basic. "What are you doing there?"
The answer was a deep, mockingly cheerful growl. "Isn't it obvious? I'm standing in your way."
"Ganner Rysoed."
Numenor began to relax. This was Ganner Rysoed, the weakling who could not even mount the causeway. Ganner Rysoed, who got no respect from the other Jedi. Ganner the poser, the play-actor. "The joke," Numenor snorted. He would just order the fool cut down. But Ganner didn't sound weak now. Or foolish. And what had happened to the missing recon squad? And did Numenor really want to be responsible for starting a brawl in the Well of the World Brain? He bit his lips so hard he tasted blood. "Stand aside. There are thousands of warriors out here. You cannot hope to stop us."
"I don't have to stop you. All I have to do is slow you down."
A sharp buzzing crackle made Numenor jump. From the shadow's hand sprang a meter-long bar of vividly sizzling amethyst.
"You want me to move?"
The shadow beckoned with the blade of light.
"Come on and move me."
The smoke thinned and cleared, and the human within the archway didn't look at all like the Ganner Numenor remembered. This Ganner wore only faded brown leggings and battered leather boots. This Ganner was tall, broad-shouldered, and the light from his weapon gleamed on the sculpted muscle of his bare chest. The blade in his hand was steady as the roots of a mountain, but it was not this that made Numenor hesitate, made him run his thin yellow tongue nervously between his filed, sharp teeth. It was the light in Ganner's eyes. He looked happy. "There are thousands of warriors out here," Numenor repeated, waving a futile fist. "You are only one man."
"I am only one Jedi."
"You're insane." The man's answering laugh was deep and long and bright, full of joy and freedom.
"No, I am Ganner."
He spun his shining blade in a dazzlingly complex flourish that illuminated the arch around him, making it shine like a rainbow frame for the pure animal grace of his body. "This threshold," he announced through a happy grin, "is mine. I claim it for my own. Bring on your thousands, one at a time or all in a rush. I don't give a damn." His flourish ended with the blade slanted before his chest, and his teeth flashed in the gloom.
"None shall pass,"